Welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We're trying a new opening. It's called the Phantom Opening. We're asking our listeners to use their imaginations to hear the Pearl Jam song and Howard Beale. You know it by now. We're having a little technical issue with our opening. The Phantom thing isn't going to work forever. We're not going with it, but we're going with it today. And in spite of that, I am really happy to be back in Portland. I had a really great Thanksgiving in L.A. filling in for the Norman Goldman show. I want to put out a big shout out to Norman Goldman for allowing me to sit in his very chair down in sunny Los Angeles. I got a little suntan. I got a little attitude adjustment. I had Thanksgiving, which, of course, always presents growing opportunities. I had a few growing opportunities, and I had a lot of fun. We have a great show for you today. I mean, a really great show for you. First of all, on my monologue, I'm going meta. I'm going meta. I'm going meta-political. I'm going metaphysical. I'm going meta-social. Because I am so sick and tired of the political minutiae, I could scream. I just can't watch another Republican debate without gagging. I don't want to hear about another Democrat that betrays progressive principles. I can't take it anymore. So I'm going meta. And I was in a strange mood all week, and it informed what I wrote. I think it's pretty cool, but just get ready because it's out there. Okay, get ready with your calls. I'm going to want your feedback on this. In the second hour, we're going to take a look at some pieces of legislation that have a disconcerting, or as the Republicans would say, a troublesome common theme in that if passed, all people would need to shut down websites or detain American citizens indefinitely would be accusations. So we're going to look at two pieces of legislation. We have someone from Parker Higgins from the Electronic Frontier Foundation is going to be here to help us look at PIPA and SOPA, which are the Internet Piracy Acts now working their way through the Senate and the Congress, respectively. And we're also going to have David Swanson to talk about the National Defense Authorization Act and a provision that recently came out of committee, which would allow the United States government to detain American citizens without due process indefinitely. And if that doesn't scare you, I don't think you're paying attention, because it scares me. And we need to look at these things. And then the third hour, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward is going to be here. She is a candidate for appointment for Suzanne Bonamici's seat. And, of course, Suzanne Bonamici is running for David Wu's vacated seat against Rob Cornelius. So we have a very full show for you. And Lee Camp. I have a new monologue from Lee Camp. And if we have time at the very end of the show, I'm going to play it because, you know, I love Lee Camp. Okay, so to the monologue, to what's been rattling around in my head. Because when I look at the world, what I see is that it's gone stark, raving mad. I mean, our nation is in crisis. Americans are scared, they're angry, confused, lost, and isolated, one day stiffening their courage with Viagra, the other assuaging their helplessness with pills that help them adapt to a maladapted culture. We seek refuge in consumerism, reality shows, celebrity obsessions, war, pornography, and of course, fourth meal from Taco Bell. We're overfed, overweight, and overwhelmed. And yet we are still starving for a life that makes us feel satisfied. One in four children go to bed hungry in America, while 300 families own more of the wealth than 155 million of their fellow citizens. And when we cry out for fairness, they say we are being unreasonable. When we howl for democracy, they serve us free markets. When we stand up for our liberty, we get sprayed down like dogs. The world is mad. And our planet is literally melting under the heat of our glaring insanity. I read the other day that 2 trillion tons of ice have melted in the coldest places on our planet in the last 8 years. The extinction rate of plants and animals rivals that of 65 million years ago when dinosaurs drew their last breath. Billions of people starve while a few million fatten themselves on the excesses that come from global criminal actions. Humans have become an ecological disaster, a planetary holocaust devouring the beauty and resources of this planet like a virus. We have become a danger to our own survival and the survival of everything here, and yet we persist as if we had no alternatives. as if we still had time to make different choices. Later, you know, sometime in the future, as if the future is still a long way off. But the future is now, and the past is here. Because the consequences of our actions and our choices are upon us. So, what does that mean? That means that this is our moment in history. The whole human arc has been moving towards this moment. Because the truth is, and you and I know it, humans at some level have always been insane. It seems to be a part of our purpose somehow, woven into our call, as if by creating this crisis and then resolving it, we will understand and appreciate the value of lasting peace. It's as if when we finally come to terms with our own brutality and selfishness in some inexorable way, we will, at long last and for the first time, have achieved something truly human. But what will we make that from, right? I mean, if the world is mad, and I think we all pretty much accept that it is completely out of its flipping mind, then what will we use to rise above? You see, this is the question, the Aquarian revelation, the moment when we come to understand that there is nothing of this world from which we can use to craft our salvation. And the reason is that it isn't here. That's the whole point. We keep looking for it in the world, in money and fame and power and ambition, and all it ever leads to is suffering and inequity and addiction and hopelessness. And so as long as we keep looking for it here, it will keep eluding us. And the reason for that, I think, is that we are supposed to bring it with us. You see, that's the biggest cosmic joke of all, that we keep looking for something we already have, and it's driving us out of our minds, because we are the answer to our own problems. We are the salvation we seek. We brought it with us, and it is our destiny as human beings to find a way to bring it forward into the world. I mean, when I think about my own personal life, it's exactly the same thing, right? All the most valuable lessons I've ever learned have come out of deep crisis. This is how humans process and evolve. In fact, everything processes things this way because everything in motion and alive is either evolving or dying. It is the creative tension between that moment of quantum possibility and the very real prospect of annihilation when something new emerges. And the human species is at such a quantum moment. And the political minutiae and considerations of the day don't cut it, because that moment is happening to, through, and around us right now. We are in one of those still points at the moment in our evolution when we are neither breathing in nor breathing out. We are not holding our breath, just paused in that small, still instant between in and out, between the choice to adapt or die, between what we have always been and what we must become in order to survive. Because like it or not, these are the interesting times we are living in, and we will not generate solutions with the same mind that created the problems, right? I mean, we've all heard that Gandhi quote, but he left out an important part of the question. What mind will we use then? I mean, we're already clever enough to fix the problems at the most superficial level. I mean, if we wanted a global renewable energy infrastructure that didn't destroy the planet, we could build it in 20 years and put billions of people to work in good jobs doing it. That is, if we wanted to. I mean, if we made a commitment to ending hunger on this planet, are you telling me that we don't have the means or the resources to make that happen? Of course we do. And we could put good people to work in good jobs doing that too. And these are the easy things. Because the point is, we already have the means. What we don't have is the will. What we don't have is the new collective mind on the growing edge of our evolution, making that next right decision. See, I've always said that the problem with our innocence isn't that we lose it. It's that we can't lose it. I mean, if I could actually lose my innocence, you know, just walk away from it, man, I would be free. But we can't lose it. It's what we are. It's the thing that gets twisted up around us when we encounter a world so tragically inconsistent with our fundamental nature. It's the thing that keeps calling us, that keeps torturing us, because we know that we know a better way. I remember one time I was in Peru on what I call a kind of spiritual tourism trip. And for days, we were out in all these amazing places like Machu Picchu and Nazca and the Andes Mountain Range. And I was chewing coca leaves and lighting sage sticks and, you know, chanting in the ruins of really old buildings. And the whole time, you know, I was like, I know, I'm just moments away from enlightenment. And then near the middle of the tour, we ended up in a hotel that had cable television. You know, and I was afraid to turn it on at first, but I did anyway, because that's what TVs command that we do. And there it was. CNN and BBC News and the whole doomed human circus on parade again, like I never left it. And I was hypnotized by it. When I finally turned the television off, all I could hear was the faint ring left in my ears and a silence that no longer felt so enlightened. And I thought, how do you save a world like that? And the answer came back immediately. You have to forgive it. And then I thought, well, how do you do that? This time, the answer didn't come back so fast. In fact, it didn't come back at all. And so for days, I thought hard on it, hoping the answer would put me back in that, you know, smudge stick enlightened headspace I paid all this money for. But for days, it didn't come. And by then, we had moved into a new place, one that did not have a TV, thank God, in the middle of this really dry desert in Nazca. Only the hotel was surrounded by this huge stucco wall with the greenest grass I've ever seen inside of it. Now, it wasn't a posh place, you know, not a resort, no golf courses or hot tubs. Just all of this amazing grass with a wall and an ancient desert beyond it. And so one night while I was there, I got a knock on my door. And it was a woman from the tour I barely knew. I was surprised to see her, and there was no sexual vibe or anything, but she asked if I wanted to take a walk. And I was on the trip alone, so I thought it would be nice to take a walk with her for a while. The night sky was, you know, this deep indigo, and there's this unbelievable amount of stars. And as I walked with her, I asked her my question. I told her my question. How do you forgive such a guilty world? And she said, I don't know. And we walked in silence for a while, and then she stopped. And it was late, and it was really quiet, and she said, shh. We just stood there for a long moment, you know, just totally quiet. And then she said, look over your shoulder. And I turned around and I didn't see anything but a big black silhouette of a giant sand dune with a moon setting behind it. And I stared at it for a while and I said, what am I looking at? That hill, she said. That moon. Those stars. It's like the world is brand new, isn't it? Like, it's totally innocent again. And just when I was thinking that this was all getting a little too much, even for me, this giant white owl flew in over the fence and landed in this huge pine tree next to us and stared down like God herself. And we were able to hold the moment for a minute, but, you know, we all started to freak out. The owl, the woman, and definitely me. And as fast as the owl landed, it flew away again. You know, and the next day we found out that the owl adopted this hotel because it likes the digs. But as I laid my head down to sleep at night, I had gotten the answer to my question, and it relates to what I'm trying to say now, right? That the first part of the question is the only way to save the world is to forgive it. And the only way to forgive it is to see its innocence, not its guilt. You see, so back to Gandhi's question, this is the new mind we must bring to the problems we face. The mind that does not buy into the guilt of the world, but the one that insists on its innocence. Now, I'm not saying we don't hold people accountable, not at all. In fact, that's why we need a democracy that actually functions like a democracy, because it confirms our best suspicions about equality and human dignity and the sanctity of the whole community. That's why we need a justice system that is actually capable of justice. I mean, the most asphyxiating twists of our innocence in recent times is when our system of justice utterly failed to hold a group of Americans accountable who started a devastating illegal war based on lies against an unarmed country for profit. These people have committed crimes against humanity, and we will not evolve beyond this abomination until they are brought to justice. Justice is the assertion of our innocence, and it reinstates our faith in the world. So there is a big difference between assigning guilt and demanding accountability, because our belief in the guilt of the world only increases our cynicism, while accountability sets us free to believe again. So, I believe it is innocence that we have brought with us to save ourselves, what we cannot lose. And from our belief in it, in claiming it for ourselves and for each other, and in seeking it out wherever we go, including within ourselves, and in spite of all the available evidence, we will find it. And when we find it, we will have located everything we need. Because hope is born of innocence, and joy is born of innocence, and love is born of innocence, and imagination and creativity and the will to live freely are born of our innocence. And we will renew our minds and reinvigorate our spirit and unleash the very best within us. I'm not saying we don't take a political stand. I'm saying exactly the opposite. Now is our moment in history when we do take a bold and final stand, but not to condemn the world's guilt, rather to proclaim its innocence once and for all. So I want you to try something. It's the practical application of what I'm saying. See if you can do it for a week. Hell, see if you can do it for an hour. Whenever the world comes at you presenting its guilt, whether it's Norman Cain, whether it's Herman Cain or Newt Gingrich or any of these clowns, set your mind free for a moment if you can. Don't nod your head. Don't tisk tisk. Just know that something else is going on. And you will help untangle the tortured innocence that is twisted up around the neck of this world and allow it to breathe again into your belief, your courage, and your unyielding vision of what we might become. Now, I told you this was a weird one, but I just had to get it out of me. There's just only so much MSNBC I can take before I need some kind of vision to get me through. Because like Roosevelt said, without vision, the people perish. So I have no idea how we're going to talk about this. But if anyone out there got what I was saying, or if you just want to call and make sure I'm taking the right medications, the numbers are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. I dare you. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. I'll be right back.